5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
And hello and welcome to the Apple WWDC special of Tech Talk this week. Yes, it was the big day, Monday, June 22nd, the day when Apple announced absolutely nothing. It was terrible. It was awful. No, I'm only kidding. Robin Christofferson's here with me to digest the news from AbilityNet, of course. Hi, Robin.
Hi, there was loads of stuff. We've only got an hour. How are we going
to
do it?
I know, but it was only software, though, no hardware. But look, let's get to that in a minute. We've got to introduce our other guest. Yeah, we have another guest with us. We were hoping for the man who knows everything there is to know about technology, but instead we got Sean Preece, who normally joins us on the show. Hi, Sean.
Hello, what an intro. Thank you, Stephen. It's always nice to feel welcomed.
Yeah, well, in fairness, we did tee up that Robin Spinks from RNIB was going to be joining us, but unfortunately he couldn't. He's got some parental responsibilities today, and unfortunately the wee one's not well. So we wish little Tig all the best and hope he gets well soon. But and Robin, good luck with that. So moving on.
That's all right. Yeah. No worries.
We didn't contact Sean like 5 minutes ago and say, you know, throw yourself in your shed, will you, so that we can do this show. Didn't do that.
What a guy.
Yeah, I know.
He was always here.
He was always there. Well, we kind of knew that, so that's why we called. No, listen, it's great to have you here. And I am really intrigued to know your thoughts. We all did join up on the Monday night to, you know, sort of get together and talk through what was going on as it happened. We were all listening in to the big event. It was held, first of all, we should say it was held virtually this year because, of course, coronavirus meant that all of the live opportunities to host it live at the Steve Jobs Theatre in Cupertino were out, although it did actually come from the Steve Jobs Theatre in the fantastic Apple campus. And they really did show that off quite well last night. They did a fantastic job on Monday night's broadcast of it. And not recorded, Robin. They didn't, not live, I should say. They didn't do it live. They did it recorded instead. Can you tell we've been up all night? But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We should probably apologise in advance that this show is going to be as live because, yeah, we're just recording it now, just before it goes out to you guys. So,
well, that's right, yeah.
We're doing apologies in advance.
We're doing what's called in the business an apple. Because they didn't do it live, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, we all were part of the Microsoft Ability Summit that lasted a whole 15 minutes before it came crashing down. Then they managed to get back on track and get it all sorted. But, you know, the perils of going live during a pandemic with, you know, lots and lots of thousands, if not millions of people trying to tune in at the same time is challenging. Whereas Apple's event yesterday, very slick, stutter-free. It was very, very well done, I've got to say.
It was the best I've seen. I've got to say, everyone was worried about, oh, no, it's going to be different. It was better than previous keynotes, I think.
Yeah.
It was produced well. You didn't have to stop or stutter with people applauding and whooping at weird announcements. You know, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I think this is the way to go.
Yeah, I've got to agree on that. Did you like it, Robin?
I loved it. I thought it was really good. And there is a lot that we need to cover, so let's get on.
All right.
Robin.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, then. I think you need a coffee, Robin. right, okay, but you're right. There is a lot to get through and unpack. Look, should we start with iOS? Because what they did yesterday, for those who aren't as geeky as us and didn't follow it, they sort of ran through all of the different operating systems, iOS, watchOS, iPadOS, macOS. They didn't touch on tvOS, interestingly, but maybe that's yet to come, or indeed that more of this information will come out as WWDC continues. We were only getting the headlines, really, from the keynote with Tim Cook. But let's run through some of the iOS updates. I mean, look, for a lot of it, it seemed to me very visual. There were lots of visual changes in iOS 14. Not a huge amount of excitement for us as blind people, particularly. Or was there, Robin?
Well, I mean, widgets. Who doesn't like widgets?
Me.
I mean,
me.
There you go.
It's funny because I don't know if, obviously everyone who uses iOS knows that, you know, when you unlock your phone and you're on the home screen, that's actually page 2. And I hardly ever go to page 1, which is the today view, which is where all the widgets have hung out up till now. I had to actually remind myself that existed. And those widgets that I obviously don't find that important because I never got on that screen, will now be able to be available on your other home screens as well instead of icons. So the days of a grid of icons is over. You can have different sized widgets. They can be, you know, they can take up more space than just that single one, depending on how much information you want them to convey. We can talk about the stacks, I think they're called, the library feature that basically I've got 9 screens of icons on my phone.
Ridiculous.
The ones that I use a lot, I've put on the first screen, which is actually page 2, as I mentioned a moment ago. And all the rest are just kind of this jumble. So what they've done is they've automatically categorized them. I mean, we know that when you put one app icon on top of another to create a folder, it suggests what that folder might be called because it knows about what kind of apps they are, if they're 2 news apps or travel apps or whatever. So it's using that information to automatically categorize them into what they're calling app libraries on the last page of your home screen. And you can actually hide all the ones in between. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep my page 1 with my single icons. I don't have folders on page 1. All the pages like 2 to 9, I'm going to hide. And then the 10th one will kind of be my second page. And that will have just automatically categorized folders or libraries, as they're called. So I think that's a really good thing. I'm actually looking forward to that a lot. What do you guys think? Okay.
The organization and the housekeeping aspect of keeping your home screens and your apps organized is a bit of a nightmare. I've got to say, I think the way that you can create folders and the drag and drop options, you know, the way they've made that accessible is really good. But very few people, I find, use that. Like you, Robin, there's just apps all over the place. And people will either use the Spotlight or use Siri to open an app, which is fine. I get that. But I don't know, for someone like me, it really annoys me. I want nice, clean shopping app and, you know, yeah. I want folders for everything.
I'll tell you what's annoying me. You know, we're doing this as live, as I said earlier, and Sean's mic is terrible. I mean, let's be honest about it. I can barely hear him. Can you hear him properly, Robin? I mean, he's so quiet over there. Come on, Sean. I know you're in a shed. But
is that better?
It's horrible. Dear.
No, Sean's good.
He's good. No, I'm not criticizing him. I'm criticizing this terrible mic.
No, he's criticizing my mic. I think it's actually Stephen's headphones, but I'm going to go off Robin. Robin, do I sound okay?
You sound better
than
that.
You do sound good.
You do sound better than that. You sorted it.
So
right, okay.
Now I've been interrupted and totally taken off my flow. I will say this is a good idea, having the apps. Look, let's be honest here, and I don't want to go down this route, but I am. It is very Android app drawer-like, isn't it? You know, you've got a place where all your apps are listed. I'm very interested to see, because they mentioned there's a search bar at the top, and there all your apps will be listed alphabetically. And I think from an accessibility point of view, that could be a really great way to go through all your apps. I get sorting them by category, that's very good, but I'd rather just have a list of apps, to be honest, like on the Apple Watch.
And as you were saying, the Android has done this forever. Tweets were coming thick and fast throughout the presentation, really.
There's always somebody, isn't there? Somebody saying, oh, Android did this first. Yeah, Android did it, but it's been terrible up till now, whereas Apple do it and it's good. I think that's one thing that's missing from this. A lot of people were hoping that you would get that Apple Watch-like list of apps, which is actually something you can get with Android, but that's something that hasn't really come through. I'll still be honest, I will still use the Spotlight feature to get to my apps. It'll still be quicker for me. Or just ask Siri to do it. You know, ask Siri to open an app. It's much easier. Right, look, I don't want to spend forever talking about apps and drawers. Let's talk about some other stuff and widgets as well. I get the point of widgets in the sense of you can get quick access to information. I think it depends where that information is. If we're talking about maybe next train information or we're thinking about weather, maybe that could be good. But then again, I ask Siri for all this, so... Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, what else? Yeah. What else did you pick up on, Robin?
Well, so you're talking about Siri. So Siri is going to get a revamp as well. We're used to when we open up Siri, when we invoke her, she takes over the screen and she may or may not give you the information that you want. And more often than not, she'll give you a list of search results. You know, I found this on the web for you, and then you've got 2 or 3 choices there, and you can click through to or tap through to Safari, etc. That's going to change now. We're going to have much more of a kind of a pop-up card where she doesn't take over the whole screen. And this is going to be another recurring theme, that things that used to take over the whole screen are now actually little kind of pop-up notifications, which I think is a really good thing. the smaller she is, the more I'm hoping, touch wood, that she will just give you the information that you want. And so, yeah, slimmer, faster Siri is what I've got written down here. And I'm really hopeful that she's going to, you know, come up with the goods more often. It sounds like in revamping her that they're, you know, giving her a lot more attention because she hasn't really changed, has she, over recent years?
No,
not at all. Yeah.
It's not so much the look of it I'm worried about. It's what it can actually do.
Exactly.
I think that's the problem with a lot of people who use Siri. And there are good reasons for that. I mean, it's important to put this into context. And the reason that Amazon's Echo gets so much better response and you get your answers right more often is because it's able to identify your questions. It's able to take that information, that voice you've essentially recorded at their end, and then use it to make the experience better. Whereas Siri doesn't do that. It doesn't capture and keep your voice and, you know, keep hold of all that information. So it can't build up the same profile of you. It can't follow you the same way that these other devices can. Not in a nefarious way, but just, you know, in order to make the service better. So Apple have gone for privacy over the experience in some ways, which, you know, you can argue whether that's good or bad. But the reality is what we get is a Siri which is not that great. I mean, for things like dictation on the watch, I think she's fantastic. I think for things like, you know, opening apps, great. For getting into some settings, that's okay. Like if I want my voiceover settings or my Bluetooth settings, as I did today, you know, nice and easy to get in and access. The whole screen takeover, I'm not worried about. But I am concerned, though, for people with low vision. And I'm thinking about people like you, Sean. I know, obviously, you're a voiceover user and you use a screen reader on the computer, but I'm wondering for someone like you who's got maybe enough vision via RP that you've got, retinitis pigmentosa, which for those who don't know is essentially tunnel vision. You know, I wonder how, you know, having, you know, that little box just appear at the top of a screen somewhere, is that going to be useful? You know, rather the takeover of the screen, at least you know what's going on. But minimizing
true,
it might not help.
Again, you're using the audio cues, you know, the bing when Siri starts up. That's what you're relying on more. I don't really rely on the visuals. I can tell, you know, if the screen's gone black, I know the Siri has come up. So,
well, that's what I mean. You know, that's
gone.
There's
some visual cues there, but I mean, most of us are relying more on the audio cues. I think this is an interesting one. And it's funny because Apple seems to focus more on the UI changes, the cosmetic changes. Okay, Siri's just going to pop up at the bottom. So, you know, it doesn't distract you as much. But there's more to it behind it, I think. There's more under the surface because they say about the dictation now is going to be able to be processed on device. It no longer has to send anything off and whatever. You don't need an internet connection. So
that is interesting.
This could have an effect on how well Siri works as well, having the dictation on board. So, yeah.
Hopefully speed-wise as well.
Exactly.
And also translation as well, am I right in saying that?
Real-time translation comes to the iPhone. Yeah, there's a new app called Translation, and it will automatically recognize the language. So unlike Google Translate, for example, where you have to say which one you want, I think I'm right in saying. It will recognize a number of languages automatically.
11.
Wow. And give you real-time translation there, which, you know, from a hearing impairment point of view is brilliant because you'll get that coming up on the screen. I would just use it a bit like live transcribing. I would just use it to give you that information. If you had a hearing impairment, I think that's an absolute game changer. And now it's obviously multilingual. But yeah, I'm anticipating that it'll be nice and snappy. You know, when they talk about real time, you can't really have several seconds delay because that's going to make for a very stilted conversation, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, some improvements to the Messages app as well. They are really focusing in, especially in the iPad, of creating a uniform style, which I really like. And I think from an accessibility point of view, you know, we always like to know where everything is. And, you know, with these stock apps like Messages, like FaceTime, like any, frankly, of the apps that you use, even the call apps, you know, those that information will always remain, or, you know, the layout will remain exactly the same wherever you are in the system. So I like that. And I think this is obviously moving towards a style that is replicated on the Mac side as well. So we're seeing that uniformity happen. So I think that's a really good thing. But let's talk a little bit about the accessibility in iOS, because, I mean, there's lots of announcements. And look, people will read endlessly about the wonderful features in iOS 14, but we are an accessibility show. So let's talk about that. and some of the upcoming features. VoiceOver, for example, what's new in VoiceOver for 2020 in iOS 14? Well, some good news for VoiceOver fans, because there's a new recognition feature coming with various aspects to it, Robin.
Well, I mean, it seemed to be saying that it's going to do what it actually already does, which is try and recognise visual elements on the screen. We've all heard it saying, you know, possibly search or whatever it might be. And that word possibly means it's done something clever to an unlabeled button or whatever it is. But yeah, I mean, do you think that it's saying that it's going to be doing more than that? You know, maybe if something isn't even labeled as a button on a web page, for example, that it's going to try and dip into the code and come back and say, yes, it, you know, announce it properly as what it is.
Well, you know, we should say that none of these features were announced at the keynote on Monday, and that's no great surprise. These accessibility features don't often get picked up on, but in fairness, there are tons of features that don't get picked up on, not just accessibility. Yeah. And these are minor improvements. These are not massive announcements to be made. But of course, for us in the blind community, they are pretty massive. My reading of it from very sketchy information is literally a paragraph on Apple's website about this. What it's suggesting from my reading of it is that instead of at the moment where, say, you're in an app and you get to the bottom row of buttons that exist, you know, for it might be home, or it could be, like I'm thinking of the Twitter app, you could go to home, then you could go to mentions, you could go to, you know, messages, whatever it is that's on there. If the button isn't labeled, you would tap on it, it would say button, possibly messages, and you would then have an idea of what's going on. So it does that already. But what this is suggesting is that recognition will take that to the next level, which is the actual website itself. So if you're in Safari on your phone and you're scrolling through a website and there's unidentified buttons or unidentified labels and buttons, it will not only recognize the text on the button, it will even identify as a button, and it will tell you that. So even if the element is completely wrong, if it, you know, there are many websites where there are buttons that are labeled as links. And that can be complicated because you might think, well, someone will say to you, click the button. And you're like, what button? There's only a pile of links here. So, you know, we have to go off and do our research and find what the link is, what the button is, and all the rest of it. Whereas this will actually identify the element, tell you what the element should be, what it thinks, and then tell you what the button element actually says. And it does all this on the fly, which I think is really good. That's my interpretation of what this is going to do.
We'll certainly know more next week, because the sessions all this week will provide a lot more information, and hopefully those will be made available through the developer app that everyone can have access to now. So, yeah, well, we may have more information next week.
Well, I certainly want to watch that, because I want to know exactly what these features are. There's other things in there as well. Identifying images as well. So it will give you image descriptions. This is something we've talked about a lot, not just on the web, but also in apps as well. So think about the Facebook app, right? You get a meme and everyone's laughing their heads off in the office saying, oh, how amusing. And you're thinking, what on earth? You've no idea what's going on. Well, nothing unusual there for me, obviously. But when it comes to these images, it will not only be able to extract what it thinks is the image itself and give you some context to that, it will also extract the text that is on there. It can identify the text, pull that out. The only thing it can't do, I'm guessing, is be able to almost explain the joke. You know, this is often the problem with these images. The meme may be of something with text on top, but can you understand the relevance of it? And that's the key, you know, because that's the joke, right? If you just get some text and then it tells you there's a picture of a cat looking grumpy, will it make sense? Will the joke be understandable? And I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that's the challenge.
It's not contextual. That, I mean, that's a whole new level to go to. But just getting the text off an image, you know, automatic OCR, and it says it's going to be a more detailed description. So not just landscape, you know, trees or whatever. So maybe it's going to be a more natural language description. We don't know yet. But any work in that area is always great, isn't it? You know, it gives us more information.
There's a couple of hearing-related accessibility advancements. One is, and this is the opposite of what I want, actually, is that in films or whatever it is you're listening to where there's maybe dialogue and background noises, then it can actually enhance the background noises for people who can't hear softer, quieter noises. So it will bring them up in the mix, which is actually the opposite of what I want.
Yeah.
And but still, you know, I think that'd be really good. And then,
well, it does say that you can customize more of your sound, so you might have that option.
Take him down.
You may have more control over that. Because, again, it depends. I mean, hearing impairment is a bit like visual impairment, isn't it? There are many, many, many different variants
of it. Absolutely.
So, you know, I've got to say, you know, there are some fantastic improvements in here for people who are hearing impaired. I think it's about time. And I think there's been a movement recently online. I've seen a lot of people who've been talking about, you know, making sure that content that is audio is also transcribed, is captioned, and making those captions accessible, you know. I think transcripts are still way, way, way behind everything else when it comes to it. And I think people who are deafblind, for example, lose out on so much. And there's really no reason for it anymore. We can make all of this accessible. There was a big hoo-ha last week online because Twitter announced they were going to be creating the ability to send messages in audio form. So essentially you would have a little card, an audio card that would pop up, a bit like a video, a big play button in the middle, and you'd be able to press play and you'd be able to listen to a message. And immediately everyone jumped on it and said, hey, what's going on, Twitter? You know, where's the captioning? What happens if you can't hear this message? So that obviously kicked up. Big announcement from that was, just to go off on a sideline for a second, I don't know if you read this, but the news came out that Twitter, the accessibility team, are all volunteers at Twitter.
Oh, yeah, did hear that.
That was shocking,
that is
frankly.
Poor. Yeah.
For a company that size and the people who are working on accessibility are volunteering. Come on. That is ridiculous. So come on, Twitter, you've got to sort that out because that is nonsense.
One disappointment of yesterday's presentation was, and you know, it wasn't live, we've already said that, it was created in advance and everything, no AD.
Yeah, I know.
No audio description. That was a shocker because, you know, TV Plus has happened since last WWDC and they have a firm commitment of audio describing everything that they put in TV Plus. But no AD. That was a real shocker.
And not only that, I mean, you know, that was when I went into Apple TV yesterday to actually open this up, it said, you know, you now have to go into the TV app. You now have to, instead, you're going through the Apple Events app, but it then asks you to go into the TV app instead. So you are opening up in the TV environment to be able to watch the event. So you would think they'd be able to, and there's no reason why they can't enable the audio descriptions. And the reality is that, you know, in the days to come, videos will turn up on the Apple website and they will be described. But why not put them out on the first day? And, you know, especially as the event itself, you know,
was a
fully
perfect opportunity, and they did. Yeah. They missed a trick there. I've got to say, the thing that I'm really interested in, yes, the voiceover AI feature is interesting, but we'll see how that goes. I'm really excited about captioning photos. The ability to actually put a name or a caption on your camera roll photos. I mean, that's something we've been looking at for ages, isn't it?
Yeah, because you've been able to add a label to a photo in your photo gallery just by doing the, label element command. But I think that is brilliant. Really, really good, because that will stay with the photo now if you share it with someone else, for example.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some of the other things. I mean, one feature that came out of nowhere, really, and it's a strange feature because you think you need new hardware for this, but you don't, is the ability to now have an extra gesture added to your phone courtesy of the back of the phone, Robin. This is very interesting.
Yeah, and I guess that the gyroscope or whatever it is that is detecting when you tap on the front of the screen will also get triggered when you tap on the back, and it can tell that it's being jiggled from the back rather than the front. So you now have a double tap or a triple tap with single finger. I mean, it doesn't matter how many fingers you use, but basically it's not going to be knowing about fingers because there's no, you know, capacitive screen on the back. It's just going to be listening out for taps. So a double tap can be assigned to something. It says, for example, bringing up control panel or activating Siri, and a triple tap will do something else. And by default, there are 23 different choices of things that you would want it to do, all the kind of common stuff. But you can also assign it to a shortcut, which basically opens the options out massively, doesn't it? Because if you have, you know, a double tap on the back of your phone and it would launch a shortcut of your choice, then the world's your oyster, really.
Wow, I did not know this one. This is strange. I don't know how I feel about it. It depends how well it works, I suppose. But like
it only works when the phone's unlocked at the moment, so, but yeah.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. It depends what features are available. Yeah, it's very clever though.
I like the idea of answering calls with it. That would be what I would use the double tap for. Single finger double tap on the back of the phone to answer calls. But again, I guess you would, if the phone needs to be unlocked, that's not going to be an option off the bat.
Terrible idea. Try again, Stephen. I'm racking my brain. What would you use that for?
To answer the phone.
Yeah, but if it doesn't work while it's locked and it doesn't work, then, you know, that's not really worth it.
If your phone's unlocked, then just do a magic tap on the front to answer your phone.
Well, that's true. You could do a magic tap on the front. Exactly. I know you could do that. That's right. But I mean, there are different options for it. I mean, even, I don't know, you could have all kinds of things. Turn voiceover on and off if you wanted to quickly. I mean, you can literally customize this any way you want, which is what's good. You get the single finger double tap and the single finger triple tap. So you've got two extra gesture commands that you can use. I mean, you know, more is better than less, Sean.
Yes, I'm saying I'm very grateful for the extra gesture. I just don't know what I'm going to use it for. But yeah, it's an interesting
one. We will see.
Yeah, exactly. So anything else on iOS 14 you want to pick up on? Because I know there's lots to pick up on, Robin, but anything else you want to focus on?
There is lots of stuff. But I suppose we should... Yeah, I'm just having a look. Okay, one, app clips. I think this is big.
Mm.
So basically, think of your app scenario. You've got your apps for loads of different things. Let's take Starbucks, for example. If you download the app, then you get lots of functionality like being able to pay at Starbucks. But imagine that you haven't got that app. Or imagine that you're in a particular car park and you need to pay and they have a particular app. You don't know about it. You never heard of it. But there is something on the machine, an NFC or a QR code, and you use the camera on your phone and it detects it, or if it's NFC, you just tap your phone against it, and it will download instantaneously without having to go through the App Store or anything, a little app clip. And these are tiny little bite-sized parts of bigger apps. That's how they were kind of described. They can't be more than 10 meg. That's one of the requirements of an app clip. So these things will download really, really quickly, almost instantaneously, really. And they're kind of a one-hit wonder. They will just do one thing, whether it's to pay for something or to unlock something or, I don't know, whatever it might be. And then they go away again, as far as I can tell. So I think this is really good. This kind of opens up a whole range of functionality of third-party kind of physical things in the environment, I think, is what I was getting from it. And I mean, again, a bit like the tapping on the back of the phone, we don't know what this is going to be good for until it starts to be put into practice. And I like it. I think it's really good because there's always been this barrier. You know, you have to have the app. You have to have heard about the app. You have to download it. Yeah. You have to sign in, you know, sometimes. You have to register, set up an account. All of that goes away with these app clips. And so, yeah, watch this space and see what people do with it. Are you excited about that?
Does this mean you can get rid of those 9 pages of apps then? Because how many apps have you got on there that you only use for a specific little thing.
One-off thing. I love this idea.
This could actually clean up your home screen. I don't know. I'll be honest. I'm slightly worried by this. I know Apple's got a great reputation when it comes to security and privacy, but the very aspect of, okay, from an app clip, you can Apple Pay and you can sign in. I can just see these little symbols being plastered everywhere, and you either touch it using NFC on your device and it will open one of these app clips, or you point your camera at it and like a barcode and it will open one of these app clips. I mean, this could easily be abused. And again, this is down to how well they vet the app clips in the App Store. And yeah, I mean, it's a good idea, but I think they'll have to stay on top of this.
And it's Apple, so they will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah.
You're shooting that, Robin. Yeah. Okay.
Well, this is the thing. So, I mean, especially when it comes to accessibility, I think we're getting a little bit complacent, aren't we? Because we always do this now. We kind of automatically assume, oh, well, everything will just work now. It's going to be great. And it will. I'm pretty sure it will to the max, but of course we will have bugs and issues as we go through. And if you join up with the developer program, which is launched already, you can download this software now. And I think the public beta is out next month, so you could arguably go and download it. Although I would honestly urge caution, guys, if you're going to use your main phone, you'll know that I have the iPhone 11 Pro, which I don't use anymore. I know it's scandalous. It really is.
You think about it. Ashamed of yourself.
I know. But I love my SE. I just love my SE for my daily phone. So, you know, for that reason, I've got the 11 Pro, but that is going to get my update of iOS on there, because that would be interesting to see how it works and to see the differences that come. So I'll be able to do that. But if you only use one phone, just be very careful if you're going to go and download public betas, because things might not work, and especially around VoiceOver, you know, you've got to be so careful. Okay, let's talk about some of the other things. Or you want to pick up on one more thing? Right, because we've done half an hour on iOS and we've talked about nothing else so far.
Okay, this is 30 seconds. Maps, big overhaul, loads, and we talked about this last week, you know, the apps don't have, mobility apps or navigation apps don't know about pavements. Well, they definitely called out pedestrian pathways. They will know a lot more about wheelchair access. The lady who was presenting this part of the event was in a wheelchair, so then they'll know where stairs are. Now, this obviously might be US centric, but
I don't know, because it did say they were bringing this to the US
major cities, Shanghai.
I don't think that's. I think that was a separate feature. I think most of the mapping features they were talking about were actually coming to the UK, as well as in Canada and Ireland. So they were rolling out a lot of this. I think there are certain individual parts of this that will only be available in the big cities like New York and LA and Shanghai and Beijing. But at the moment, there are new map features coming to the UK. So, yeah, I mean, it might not be everything, but, you know, I think the pedestrian part certainly is.
Telling you pedestrian routes and whether, for example, they include stairs. So as a wheelchair user, that's really important.
And how you can avoid them as well with that.
Exactly.
Will it tell me step up, step down when a curb's coming up?
That would be better. Yeah, that would be amazing. Let's talk about the watch, because the watch had some updates to it. Not many accessibility updates that I can find. Certainly nothing been reported as yet. Yeah, well, you know, I like my Apple Watch. I still don't always know why, but I do like it. And really their focus this time was on activity. So that ruled all of us out.
I dare you. I'm such a great dancer.
Yeah, if you do dance workouts, you're going to love the new features in the Apple Watch OS 7, which is now going to be compatible with Apple Watch Series 3, 4, and 5, but it does give the caveat that not all features will work on all devices. But if you've got Series 5, you're going to be okay. But Series 3 is getting updated as well. And we should say on iOS as well, if your iPhone could take iOS 13, it'll take iOS 14. So that's good news as well. On the watch front, there are quite a lot of announcements around activity, the ability now to add those dance routines to it, if that really excites you. I mean, there are a lot of people do like a bit of that, so maybe that'll work. Although I don't think it doesn't guide you through dancing. It just means if you're following dance, then you're able to record it.
Following the dance.
Yeah, can you tell I do dancing a lot?
Recognize several... you know, known dance types, it said. So
yes, and it can tell
it'll automatically detect. Yeah.
Sorry, Robert. Upper
hop
body
hip.
Or lower body.
Hop hip, I think, is one of them.
The rumba,
yeah.
The Charleston.
The jive.
The mashed potato.
Yeah. Slosh, obviously. Yeah, no, I don't think those are included, actually. They didn't mention those ones. I didn't hear any Daniel Boone in the event. But anyway, so yeah, there's that. Sleep tracking was another thing that came up.
Awful.
No, I think this is great.
Awful. That is one of those announcements where the audience would have gone, woo! And it is the worst. Nobody cares about sleep tracking. Everybody says, oh, where's the sleep tracking feature in Apple Watch OS? And when it comes to it, nobody cares. It's a terrible, terrible, boring feature.
Is that being spoken by someone who has no problem sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Clearly.
A lot of blind people, for example, have non-24, you know, where their body clock isn't reset every day. Yeah. And, you know, if you've got sleep apnea, I think having the data, which you can then show to the hospital or whatever it is that, you know, this is the issue we're having. I need one of those, what are those masks called? that make you breathe.
CPAP machine.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So, yeah, that sort of thing. I don't know. I can usually tell when I wake up in the morning.
Everyone can tell. Everybody knows when they've slept well or they haven't slept.
Listen,
well.
I've got the solution to this. If you've got sleep apnea or you've got problems sleeping, never mind updating your Apple Watch. Just ask your Lady A to play RNIB Tech Talk podcast. And I guarantee you, you'll be out of it in 5 minutes. It works for me every time.
Look, if you want to be serious, yes, from a medical point of view, accurate tracking and details of sleep may be of use. But this isn't a feature for the mainstream. No one's really interested in this.
So what about if you need to get up really early and your partner's a light sleeper? Yeah. And then, because it has this haptic-only alarm as well, so if you're wearing your watch, it can just knock you awake.
I thought that already existed, though. I didn't think that was a new feature.
That's nothing to do with the sleep tracking feature.
Oh, okay.
That's just
I didn't
update.
Know that.
Well, I think the only difference here is that you can set a sleep schedule, so you could say that every day I want to go to bed at this time. And it's not only the getting up is the challenge for a lot of people, it's the getting to sleep. And what they've tried to do here is sort of bring in features. Again, they're quite visual features. Like, for example, the phone itself will start to dim as the night goes on. You say you'd decided you want to go to sleep at 10 p.m., then your phone will start to slowly, you know, dim down and essentially put itself in to take all that horrible backlight away, so that if you're using your phone, it's kind of telling you, right, time's up, time to put me down.
Telling you to go to bed. It's telling you when to breathe. It's telling you when to stand up. It's ridiculous.
And my favourite feature of all on the Apple Watch, which is coming, which is so ridiculous, but it's very timely, and they've obviously just chucked this in at last minute because of the events of our current world that we live in. It's not water detection, but it's automatic detection of running water. I love this. Running water, moving hands in the style of washing, and soap sounds. So basically, it works out that there's using the audio and using the various sensors inside the watch, it can tell that you're washing your hands. And it then brings up a little clock that counts down, telling you, you know, to wash your hands for 20 seconds. And then at the end, you get a well done. And that's it. It's nanny state. That's what I think. It's nanny state gone mad.
I want to know what sound soap makes, Stephen.
I think it... I think that's it, basically. Oh,
no. That's it.
Well done.
Yeah, there you go. That's soap sounds for you. So that's it. My watch now thinks I'm washing my hands. Thanks, guys. I have to sit here for 20 minutes doing this, 20 seconds doing this. No, I mean, I think it's good. I think that's a nice little feature, and obviously it's very relevant. I think that's good for kids as well. And it makes it
with
a bit
their
of fun.
Apple Watches. How many kids have Apple Watches?
Well, yours don't. Clearly.
No, exactly right.
Yeah, moving on. And watch faces as well. We're going to see a slew of watch faces, and you can share them as well. So if you want to, you could have a watch face that you create somehow, although I don't really know how this would work. I don't think there's any way of... I don't know who would make them. But if you can make your watch face, or you design your watch face using the complications you've got, and say, I wanted to say, oh, this is such a great watch face, I'll share it with Sean, I could just send it to him.
Please don't.
I don't really care about this feature. Makes no odds to me. But I did hear there's a new large print version of, you know, an extra large face.
Which apparently is much nicer looking now. It was quite blocky and unattractive before. So, yeah.
Hey. That's how I'm usually described. There's nothing wrong with the numeric watch face. It's the one I use. I think it's good. But
I think you'll like the new one.
Well, yeah, I probably will. It does seem like the watch faces were particularly limited. You know, every time an update came out, they maybe gave you a new one. But opening up the watch faces is definitely a good move.
Yeah, for sure. Look, before we move on to macOS and talk about some of the other announcements at WWDC, quick programming note for you. We've got an extra additional episode this week of Tech Talk because we've got so many emails coming into the inbox. We knew we weren't going to get any of them today, which is why Andy's not here. But Andy is back with us. That show going out on RNIB Connect Radio Thursday at 3 p.m. You can listen to it there, and you'll get it at the same time here on the Tech Talk podcast feed as well. So, we're going to push out an extra episode this week just for you because we're nice and we get so many emails and we want to get to them. Why are you laughing, Priest? It's because we're nice, we're doing this. And so actually, look, and this is the thing, right? We've got to say this because I've had a lot of people getting in touch over the weekend saying, oh, can you add this into this week's show? We'd love to do this. And an email from Kawal Gukukoglu, who got in touch with us as well, with an audio feature that she wanted in the show. And we were hoping to get that into the Thursday's episode. But we actually recorded Thursday's episode on Friday. last week. So, you know, we're kind of all over the shop at the moment. So, yeah, we'll get back on track next week and we can include those emails. So, yeah, but that extra episode going out Thursday, 3 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio, Freeview 730 and online. And you can also get it on the podcast. Just ask Lady A or search your podcast provider for RNIB Tech Talk. Right, let's talk about macOS because... macOS really, to me, just I was really excited about the updates to macOS because I thought, oh, what we're getting new. And basically, it's just all visual, you know, rounded icons, apparently, and a bit more of a what was the name of it? I can't remember. Translucent, I think, was the word that was used.
Transparent.
Transparent. So the menu bar will be translucent. I actually think some of these visual features might be more challenging for a lot of people with low vision. And still, I haven't heard yet of any ability to make the text size across the system larger. So the macOS system has always had the same text size, whereas Windows has employed, you know, the option to enlarge the entire operating system to whatever text size you want. You don't get that option with macOS on any level. I mean, you can increase a little bit there if you go into your display settings, depending on the monitor you use, because if you use an external monitor, it can change. But there is a larger text option, but that's really it. And it's not a great option, to be honest. It doesn't do that much. You can increase icon sizes, icon text. You can change some of the options inside the sidebar, into the, finder window. Some of the text sizes you can change there. So I think for low vision people, this is a bit of a bad news day because there isn't a lot there that's impressive, and I really hoped that the latest version of macOS that there would be this kind of ability to universally update the text size.
So I mean, we don't know yet, I suppose, but yeah,
that's not there.
Not looking good, is it?
No.
Well,
I read through all of the notes on macOS, thinking, oh, there'll be something in here. There wasn't even one mention of the word accessibility. That's not a good start. So unless there's more to come, and it probably is the case there's more to come, it's more under the hood perhaps, but certainly no major announcements of any changes. I am intrigued, though, as to what they do with macOS because, you know, VoiceOver in itself is actually pretty good. It doesn't need a heck of a lot added to it, but clearly there will be some updates in this new version. So we'll see what they are. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of buried the lead, which is the name of the new OS, which is bizarre, but apparently it's perfectly normal and it's a much loved beauty spot or kind of area of natural beauty in California. It's called Big Sur, two words, and the last one is S-U-R. It's a mountain range, I think. But yeah, it's called macOS Big Sur.
It's awful. What a terrible, terrible name. All their names have been terrible, I think. El Capitan and
Mojave.
Awful. And I can't even say whatever the one we're currently using.
Well, you keep calling it Katrina.
Katrina.
It's not Katrina. It's Catalina Priest.
Oh, yeah, terrible. Just call it, you know, 11, 12, 13.
Sorry, well, funny you should say that. Because now, for the first time, so we had macOS 10 when it changed over to Intel and IBM's, you know, processors, and that has been 10.1, 10.2, up to 10.15, and now, because we're going to talk about this in a second, it's moved over to a different architecture, it's now macOS 11, so yeah, it is macOS 11, like you say, but it has this stupid name as well, I mean, lovely name as well, and yeah, it's supposed to be... slimmed down, you know, better performance, which is great. Messages, maps, they're both going to be Catalyst apps. So that may or may not be a good thing. We'll certainly get fireworks and things like that on messages on the Mac, finally.
So excited. And
Safari is, I don't think, a Catalyst app, but it's certainly more performant now. They've said it's going to be quicker and there's a number of improvements in there.
50% faster than Chrome. Ability to handle far more tabs open at the same time, so and increasing, you know, performance basically, and not having the impact on battery life, because Chrome is quite a heavy app, whereas they're trying to reduce the power of Safari considerably to make it more usable. Also, what I quite liked was a bit of a buried feature, but quite good if you are a Chrome user. You can now import everything, including passwords and everything, into Safari. So you can actually bring all your Chrome world into Safari if you want to make the switch, which is obviously makes perfect sense if you want to do that.
So if the one thing that we get as voiceover users in macOS 11 is less of the word busy, then I think that's a good thing. So, yeah, we'll see.
That's the thing that totally threw me off the Mac. I couldn't stand that. And I knew I had enough power. It shouldn't be doing it in something like the Mail app. And yet I was constantly getting the busy. It drives me crazy.
Well, this is the problem. So you have a situation where, and I apologise, my dog's barking. That probably means a delivery is due any second. It usually does. But, you know, when it comes to it, I do have concerns about, you know, some of the operating system and the way that this whole busy thing works. My machine is an i9 processor with, I think, 16 cores or something. It's got 32 gig of RAM. It's, you know, very powerful machine, and it's still giving me Safari busy. I'll tell you the worst app, or the worst offender of it, is Twitterific. I love this app, but it's really, really awful when it comes to the busy thing, and I wish they would solve that. But it's not a lack of power that's a problem.
Dougal doesn't love it.
No, he's not a fan, I'm telling you.
I think go and save the Amazon man.
Yeah. Tell you what, you two talk for a second. I'll go and see what's going on.
Okay, then. So, I mean, I totally agree. And I think that one thing that we're going to see going forward here is a much more performant macOS. And that leads us on to the next topic, which is the fact that if Stephen was here, he'd have a sound effect for this.
Yes.
Yeah. macOS, or the Mac in general, is now going to have two flavors, and I know that you've got some strong feelings about this, Sean, but there's going to now be an ARM-based version of the Mac. Now, for people that can remember Windows on ARM and are going to be very worried about this transition, it's going to be very, very different. And I think that that's down to Apple being Apple and having the weight, the power that it has to take developers with it. And they're going to have to create slightly different versions of their app for the ARM-based processors, which are going to mainly be for Mac laptops, so MacBooks, probably MacBook Pros to begin with, that will have much better battery life, much less power consumption, much less heat, no need for fans, etc. And this new version of macOS, you know, it's going to have always-on connectivity, you know, just like your phone, which are ARM-based as well. And all the apps they announced, the main ones like Microsoft Office and the Adobe suite of products and all their own pro products like Logic, etc., have already had the work done on them to work with this new version of macOS. Are you excited about that?
You know what? I am. That's a shocker for you, isn't it, Robin? I am excited by it, but I'm also very, very cautious. Now, you say because it's Apple, you know, it will work. And I'm not entirely sure because they even mentioned it in the keynote themselves. So, I mean, I suppose we should go back to basics. So if you're using an Intel processor, that's an X80, was it 836? 86 architecture. Now, all your programs have been written to run in that. And if you switch that to a ARM processor, those programs will no longer work natively. You know, you need to do something to this software. So all the software that's written for the x86 architecture won't work on an ARM chip. With all that said, the ARM chips, and they're calling it Apple Silicon, aren't they? It's the same chip that's going to be in your iPhone or your iPad. They are so good now and so powerful. There's it's been said that the Apple Silicon is 1 to 2 times faster than the Intel equivalent. So the performance is amazing. And of course, you have the benefits of energy efficiency and less heat because they're having a lot of problems at the minute keeping those Intel processors cool. And if you don't keep the processor cool, then it slows down to keep itself cool and you get less performance. They're having lots of issues with MacBooks with those.
Okay, I'm back. And I want to jump in here because, and the dog will continue to bark because what's happening is my window cleaner is here and the dog is going absolutely crazy at the window cleaner. So apologies to the window cleaner. But look, I just hearing you talk there about the ARM processors, it's really interesting to me that they did this, that they announced this. And I think the big news that came out of it for me was that they were actually running all the demonstrations off the hardware. Now, you might have already said that, Robin. Apologies if you have.
No.
But they're actually running all the demonstrations off of hardware based on this ARM processor technology. So clearly, and I'll be honest, when I heard about this at first, when I was reading about it, the impression I got was that it was going to be brought in as not substandard, but as a basic option. You know, this would be the entry level Mac, the everyday Mac for most people. Actually, that's not what happened at all. It was quite the opposite, in fact. They've brought out machines that are, as you say, these MacBook Pros, potentially Mac Pros down the line, and it's going to really improve performance in a big way, not in the way that, that I thought it was going to be, which is really exciting. But was, what was most interesting was they told us the processor that the hardware was currently running on was the A12Z processor, which is the exact same processor that's inside my brand new iPad Pro 2020. So I've actually got this processor in a functioning machine right now, and that is exactly the same processor they're using to run macOS, which is going to be featured inside a developer edition of this hardware inside a Mac Mini, just to get it up and running.
So they talked about a 2 to 3 year transition period. And I think in that sort of time frame, even the very highest end, I mean, they've just brought out a very, very highly powered Mac Pro, which is tens of thousands of pounds worth of kit. But they are, I think, going to replace that one within that kind of time frame. Now, if anyone thinks that ARM processors aren't going to be up to the job, I read an article this morning that officially now the fastest supercomputer in the world is ARM-based. It's a Fujitsu supercomputer in Japan, and yeah, it's running ARM processors. They're ridiculously overpowered. Intel just haven't been able to shrink down the fab process to get the same efficiencies that you have at these really low sort of nanometer scales that ARM have managed to do. And yeah, Apple have 1,000 engineers working on their silicon, as they call it, and they're just streets ahead. So
question,
it's all
though,
about the porting over of the software.
Yeah, sorry, but yeah. Here's a question though, because I did read a couple of tweets overnight saying from people, well, hang on a minute, if I boot camp my Mac, am I still going to be able to do that on this ARM processor?
Nope.
Yes, that's something that's going to go. You can you could virtualize it, couldn't you? You could do it on VM, for example. That may be one way to do it.
Oh, and only if VM. But at the moment, it's spelling the end of either bootcamp or virtual machines as they stand at the moment. So they're going to have to be rewritten, and then they're basically going to have to emulate x86, as Sean was saying earlier.
Yeah.
But I think that the power of these processors will handle it. I think it'll be okay.
Well, they were running, what was it, Tomb Raider? One of the Tomb Raider, I don't know which one it was, but it was...
Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I'm big on that. okay,
and
that
for
one.
Existing...
Is that the one that was on the PlayStation 1? No. That's the last time I ever played Tomb Raider was on PlayStation 1.
So for software that is going to be reluctant or kind of intransigent about moving over, you know, creating a new version, then the emulation is going to be very powerful. And they've got this thing called Rosetta 2, which Rosetta was the one that helped emulate from the PowerPC when they switched to the Intel architecture. And this Rosetta 2 apparently is going to be very efficient in doing that. And that's, I think, what we were seeing with those games that they demoed, etc. But also there's a new, it's called Universal 2, I think. It's a new way of compiling in Xcode, which is what all Mac developers use, compiling their binary, their software, so that you can just code once, compile it into this, and then at the time that you put it in the different stores, it will create the two different binaries for the different platforms, whether it's Intel.
But look, I know there's a lot of people, their ears are glazing over with the thought of all of
Sorry.
This. And I know, but I it's important
I think
it's you see
saying
it.
You're not going to have to do without the kind of niche apps that you need to.
But I think the key point, though, for a lot of people is that the experience is not going to be any different. So you go into the app you always used and you'll be able to use it. That's the theory behind this, right?
That's the theory, yes. If they can pull that off, that's good. But emulation always has a performance overhead. If they can do it, and actually I think they can, going off the demos that they did, I think actually they can do it.
I'm with you on this, Sean. I was very skeptical of how this would work because any sense of emulation tells you that it's not going to be as good an experience for sure. It does mean, though, I mean, I worry about it because I live in a kind of between Windows and Mac at the moment, and the idea of not being able to do that is a problem in the future. However, it is also important to say that they will continue to support Intel Macs for many years to come. So if you've just bought, like I did last year, this amazing MacBook Pro that I've got, it's not going to be, that's it, straight to the bin, you know, landfill, or turned into something else in a couple of years' time. Although, you know what I'm like, that could happen. But the truth is, not only will they continue to support it, they're actually still going to be selling Intel Macs, which I thought was an interesting announcement they made yesterday.
I don't understand it at all.
Tim Cook said at the end, you know, we'll still sell, we're actually bringing out new Intel products later in the year. So they're not obviously getting rid of it completely, but you know, that's they're going to live in a dual world for a while, and perhaps
and also,
that's not a bad thing.
The A12Z, which is also already, you know, hugely powerful, they're not just going to sit on that for the next couple of years. It's going to be A13 and then A14, isn't it? Because they do that every single year.
Every year, yeah. Well, see, that was the whole thing about the entire event. If you step back and look at it all, it was all about getting every operating system, that sense of uniformity, you know, with the sidebars and the way that the Siri and calls come in at notification style. I think it's all heading to this one universal ecosystem running iPhone and iOS apps on macOS. It's all coming together and converging. So eventually we're just going to have one singular piece of hardware.
Yeah.
And I think we should re-emphasize that. They called that out, that you will be able to get iPhone, iOS and iPadOS apps in the Mac App Store. So, you know, if your Twitterific is busy and you're, I'm not going to say it twice, and your favorite, you know, desktop Mac app is just a bit clunky, like Slack, for example, you know, they exist on macOS, but it's just not as easy to use as the iOS version. Just pick the iOS version. So, yeah, I think it's going to open up loads of possibilities and accessibility bonuses for us as well.
And one final iOS feature I want to mention, I meant to bring this up earlier and it escaped me, but this one, which I thought was really interesting, if you are on FaceTime, we talked today about hearing impairment as well and people who are deaf who want to use this hardware as well. If you start a FaceTime call in iOS 14 and the person who you're talking to is signing, the phone will recognize that, and it will actually bring that person's screen, their video on the screen, to the fore, and it will keep it there because obviously it knows that that person you're speaking to is deaf and wants to communicate via that method. That's pretty impressive.
That's really good.
That is pretty impressive. That's a really nice feature as
Next
well.
Next step is to actually recognize the
exactly.
ASL or BSL. So, yeah, going back to Mac, ARM is going to be, the first hardware is going to come out towards the end of this year. So if you're wondering when the transition is going to happen and people are going to get them in their hands, end of this year.
So that's it from us for this week. It's been a really interesting time. I'm sure there's so much more we could get into, and I'm sure we will over the coming weeks, especially next week, I think, when we've got a bit more of a sense of the bigger picture here and what will come out of this from an accessibility point of view. So do check out Tech Talk again next week for that. Don't forget our extra special episode, which is out this week, Thursday at 3 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio, 3 p.m. I should say. And also you can catch us on the podcast as well anytime. The extra episode will also be available there. Just search for RNIB Tech Talk if you're not on the podcast right now. If you're listening to us on Freeview 730, why not check out the podcast and get us anytime you want? Hey, we might even help you get to sleep as well. Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Stephen, as always.
And Sean Priest, thank you for giving up your time at short notice to be on this episode with us this week.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
That's it for Tech Talk. Catch you next time.